I'm Adam Foster, along with Jake Hamlin and Brett Sullivan. You are listening to a Project Prospect / First Inning podcast. So we're all having too much fun out here in Arizona. Been attending two Arizona Fall League games for the last 3 days. Plan to do it for another four more. In the midst of this, we stayed up to, what was it, 2 in the morning, Brett, to try to finish up that top 15 outfield prospects list?
I believe so. We're trying to perfect it, and, you know, nothing's ever perfect, as you can see from some of the comments we've received, but we feel like we put a lot of time and effort in discussing all the players on the list, and we're pretty happy with the outcome.
Yeah, it's always too early to say a prospects list is really good or really bad, and unless it is really good or really bad. But in this case, it's kind of fun because, Jake, you filmed a lot of games for the San Jose Giants. You've seen a lot of games this year. Brett, you've been out here at the Arizona Fall League with us. We've all followed a full minor league season. I think you'd both agree that there's more video than ever on prospects online now, both with Prospect Tube and just YouTube searches. We have some great data from First Thing, so it was a lot of fun putting this list together just because there, I mean, at points it's almost like information overload. And I found that
absolutely
this trip has just been so much fun getting to see these guys sitting right behind home plate. We're getting there 2.5 hours before the game to watch batting practice and everything, and kind of all these numbers that you see over the course of years with these guys start turning into, well, Thomas Neal has a sick line drive swing, and he's actually a pretty good runner, and you can use that along with the numbers, and so much information, and that's what we use to make this list. Just going to start with some of the guys we've seen so far in the Fall League, and one of the ones we've been pretty vocal about is Dominic Brown. What's been your take on him, Brett?
Well, I think we saw him three to four times already. The first time we saw him, we were kind of a little bit surprised with how, you know, at times he looked sort of uncoordinated with his body. His swing, he has a long load. In the outfield, he looks a little unsure of himself at times, like taking the direct routes and stuff. And, you know, he's got all the athletic tools that you could want in a prospect. The problem is he doesn't really look like he knows what to do with them at this time.
And when we talk about Brown, we're doing it under a very critical light because he is clearly an elite prospect. So it's almost like you look for flaws in someone's game when they're at that kind of level and they're receiving this kind of attention. This evening when we saw him, he made an outstanding throw to the plate. He's someone who clearly has, I put in the blurbs, he's a fast twitch athlete. And Jake, you've been vocal about how you wish he was a football wide receiver.
Absolutely, he's got ideal skills for that. His swing is very long. He's moving. It looks like he's bending down when he starts to swing from his back. I almost wonder if he's being taught by someone who hasn't worked with a tall player before. It almost looks like he's trying to compensate to me for his height at 6'5", which is, you know, he's got his hands up, he's trying to bring him down, and he's bending his back, which is making his swing incredibly inconsistent. So there are nights when he's making great contact, and there are nights when he's swinging and missing badly. Just makes him, you know, just the ultimate crapshoot prospect right now.
I mean, really, to be terribly blunt, when Brown steps up to the batter's box and does his load, he looks like your little sister who wasn't in a league of their own trying to do a batting stance. Like, I would love to see batting stance man try to do Dominic Brown, and really, it could be something that eventually catches on. I can imagine little leaguers doing the Dominic Brown batting stance 7 years from now, but until we see him be very successful with it, it is a bit of a long swing, even though he has really quick bat speed and very quick wrists, and there is power there, but it's just something that looks a little bit awkward, and like you touched on, Brett, you see it similarly when he's in the outfield. He is very fast, but he's the kind of guy who doesn't get the greatest reads, doesn't get the greatest jumps. I would say, overall, he doesn't have, like, outstanding body control.
Yeah, I mean, so would you say it's fair to call his floor someone like Fred Lewis, who's just that super athlete who doesn't really know how to play baseball? Is that the worst he can be right now? Does that sound fair?
I would say Brown's already past that point. But I think it is something to consider with him that he doesn't have as high of a floor as some of these other guys. And really, in terms of his defense, I think people look at, okay, he clearly has a good arm. Okay, he's clearly a fast runner. But it's almost like when you're looking at a high school athlete and you're wondering, you can see the tools on paper. You can see the stuff that you almost get at these combine showcase events. But can you really tell if a high school hitter is going to be able to step into pro ball and be patient? I don't think there's a good way of doing that. That's why you see Tim Beckham being the number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. And I think with Brown and anyone's defense, it's hard to really know what you're getting until you see them in live action, see them making the big plays. And right now I would say that Brown is a good bet to be an average defensive right fielder, but after seeing him play three or four times, I wouldn't say he's a good bet to be an above average plus defensive right fielder, even with that good arm.
Yeah, I'd say I he's probably one of the most surprising players I've seen, because I was expecting someone who, you know, the scouts seemed to rave about him, and statistically he had an excellent year. Just didn't seem to match up with what we saw so far out of him. And, you know, we're going to get to see him at least 3 to 4 more times, and hopefully he can show us some of those things that people have been raving about. And I think he's got, like I said, all the talent in the world. His ceiling is definitely high. His floor, maybe not as high as we previously thought. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Thomas Neal's another guy who we've gotten to see out here, and it's been interesting. Our first day here was actually his second day playing first base in the Fall League. He did play first base pretty regularly in 2007 when he was with Augusta in the South Atlantic League. I think a lot of people think of Neal as, where did this guy come from? It's a huge breakout season for him, and it was. But Jake, as you were discussing earlier today, he had shoulder surgery.
So he tore his labrum. Neal is, for those of you who don't know, I spent some time doing video work for the San Jose Giants this year, so I actually got to see this breakout of Thomas Neal happen live. And he was a guy who was playing maybe every third day at the beginning of the season, ultimately forced his way into the lineup, and by the end of the year was the best hitter on the team. You know, he's a huge, huge guy. You look at him, and just the size is evident. He looks like a guy who'd have a ton of power. And he's got an incredibly level swing, and his plate patience is there, and he's gotten so much better over the course of the year. This breakout looks really legit. Athletically, he was a 36th round pick. He was a draft and follow, did the community college thing, and then he was signed by the Giants in 2007, I believe, was in low A, and tore the labrum in his shoulder, didn't play at all. In the 2007 season after that. In 2008, I think is when you're talking about, he was in Augusta last year, split time at first base with Fiolona. He OPS roughly 790. You know, he's sort of, okay. And like I said, was in San Jose, was sort of hanging out. And then he just exploded. And what we've seen here today is a guy with a terrific line drive swing, makes good contact, reads pitches well, he's patient. He's even stolen 8 bases. He's shown some much more athleticism for a guy his size than we would expect, and he's really been a really pleasant surprise.
Yeah, I think you'd have to be ridiculously ahead of the curve to have Neal as someone who you were excited about entering this season. But now he has grabbed everyone's attention. He's certainly grabbed our attention. It's interesting when you talk about Neal as someone who, he doesn't look like a great athlete. He doesn't look like someone who's going to be a good defender. Interestingly, he already has more stolen bases in the Fall League than he did the previous two seasons combined. And we see him run. It's not like he's lumbering around the bases. He's really coordinated and pretty athletic for such a big dude. I think he's over 200 pounds, 6'3" or so. So we were really impressed with his footwork and his hands at first base. I think if he is moved to first base, because he still is just 22, he's probably going to get a little bit bigger. He's probably going to get a little bit slower. Who knows if he's going to be an average left fielder. If he does move to first base, by what we've seen so far, he looks like someone who could be potentially average or better at the position. And then the key with him is he hits for a lot of power, and he's hitting a lot of line drives. He manages the strike zone really well. He's not a above average contact hitter, but he's definitely passable there. He's very patient. He's someone who gets his money's worth every at bat. And someone else who we've seen like that, I think, is Chris Heasey. I think he and Neal have a bit in common. Heasey is 3 years older, but Heisey. There we go. We should know this. The PA announcer throws out sometimes. With Heisey, he's, I think, a little bit taller than Neal, a little bit leaner, but still a guy who's very well built. Hits a lot of line drives, runs pretty well, especially for someone his size.
Yeah, he was a guy I wasn't even really interested in. I sort of tuned out when I saw his name in the lineup in the first game that we saw him in. And I think he had, 3 extra base hits in that game or something? I mean, he hits the ball hard. He he was so much better than we all expected to see. It's been really fun to watch.
I hear a lot about high school hitters who haven't really done anything in the big leagues, but people say, well, they have bat speed, and you can't teach bat speed. Mm-hmm. And with Heisey, he definitely has bat speed. Yeah. He has a bit of a loft in his swing, which is going to lead to some strikeouts. He didn't strike out a ton in the minors, but I think he's only going to be an average contact hitter in the big leagues. He seems like someone who has basically average tools across the board, mm-hmm. and might be a number three outfielder, maybe a number four outfielder, but it's looking like he's going to be someone who provides big league value. And when we were looking at the number nine spot on our top 15 outfield prospect list, he was someone who we thought fit well there.
I think his lack of weaknesses is what kind of keeps him in that range. He you know, like you said, he's not a great power hitter, but he's got, you know, the ability to hit for some power. He's not going to strike out too much. He's got speed. He's got some decent positional value. So he doesn't have the weaknesses that some people lower than him on the list, like perhaps Michael Saunders and others, have shown. He's kind of an all-around solid guy that you want in your team, you know?
And I would say that anti-Chris Heisey is Grant Desme. We've gotten to see quite a few times this week, and Jake and I were discussing before his overall strikeout rate in the Arizona Fall League, and it is a little bit better than it was in the California League. If you didn't follow Desme close during the season, he hit like 20 home runs in half of a season in the California League playing there as a 23-year-old. But his first week at the Fall League, he struck out about 40% of the time. Second week, it was down to something like 15% of the time, and then back up again. The first two times we saw him, he was striking out on check swings. He was striking out on ugly swings. Like, he
looks like new ways to strike out, actually.
He had no business facing this kind of competition. But then I know he hit a lot of home runs before we got here, and he did have... Jake, you were counting the last time we saw him. He reached base in almost every at bat. He walks a lot.
Four plate appearances, four times he reached base. You know, he's a guy. He's also a guy who's tough to read because he lost a full season to injury as well. Didn't really play at all last year in 2008. I'm saying. And this year, you know, he's the numbers 30-40. He went 40 steals as well, which is, you know, just shows the athleticism the guy has. You know, his approach at the plate leaves something to be desired. He's going to strike out a lot, I think. You call him a powerball ticket because he's got physical tools. You know, if anything, he compares more to like a 19-year-old hyper toolsy prospect than to a 23-year-old college guy because he looks like, you know, he's got power, he's got speed, he's got tools, and he has no clue how to use them. So.
And I think you made a good point there about how you do need to distinguish between the guys who are relatively old in the minors because they've had injuries versus guys who are relatively old in the minors because they keep repeating levels. And in Desme's case, he was hit by a fastball, I believe, his junior year at Cal Poly, which pretty much kept him out. The injury didn't go away for the bulk of his first pro season, too. And he was someone who was rising so quickly at Cal Poly, he was thought to be a potential first rounder. But the injury slipped him down lower in the draft, and it really wasn't until this year when he had a chance to prove himself, and he's definitely a legitimate prospect. He's someone mm-hmm. who's going to be given plenty of opportunities to reach the big leagues. Just at this point, he's still pretty raw, and when you have a 24-year-old who you say is pretty raw, it's a little bit concerning.
Yeah, he's pretty intriguing. Like, you'll go out there, and you'll think he's 1990 Jose Canseco one game, and the next game will be 2009 Jose Canseco. So you've got to look at the upside. He could be a potential, you know, right field to center field defense, above average with power and speed, but you know the strikeouts are going to linger, and that's probably what's going to hold him back from being an above average player. But you know, he's been the type of player that can produce on multiple levels.
Jose Tabata has been another interesting one for me out here, because when you look at him, he spent a good chunk of the season in AAA as a 20-year-old. You don't see that too often, and I think he's someone who received a ton of hype when he was a 17-year-old playing in full-season ball. Now here we are 4 years later. He hasn't put up great power numbers. He has an average walk rate at best, but he's an awesome contact hitter. And one thing I've noticed in studying minor league data is the big adjustment minor leaguers need to make is with contact, especially mm-hmm. when you get to the upper minors, and then when you get to the majors again. It's the guys who are the best contact hitters who stick around, and then eventually they can hone their power skills. I don't think Tabata is going to be able to add patience. I don't really believe that's something that hitters can really do. But if he can put up a respectable walk rate while being an awesome contact hitter, he's not going to be a huge home run hitter. But he could be a gap hitter. People kind of give him a bad rap because he does have a thick body. But he runs really well. Yeah. He's been playing center field out here, and he doesn't look lost at all. I'm sure he's going to get bigger and probably move to a corner. But overall, I think we're looking at a guy who has a pretty good chance of being an average big leaguer.
Yeah, I mean, he's flashed a lot of range. He's made a couple of plays in center field that blow your mind because you just wouldn't think that a guy built like that would be able to make some of those plays. He's got, he's got a lot of tools and a lot of question marks, but he's also got that amazing contact rate. And if you get up to the plate and you hit line drives all the time, good things are going to happen for you.
I've been very impressed with his swing. I personally didn't know how beautiful a swing he has. I think he can add some power, be a 15 to 20 home run per year type of player. And with the contact ability he shows and with his defense in either right or center field, he could be an above average player. And I think he's one of the most impressive players I've seen so far.
And I would say, I don't think Jakey really does have a lot of question marks. I think that's what makes Tabata intriguing as a prospect, that he's a 21-year-old who's already held his own. And we were talking earlier about Delman Young versus Tabata, and if you compare those two, they're both pretty good contact hitters in the upper minors, which is promising, and Tabata walked about three times as much as Young, and
yes, he did.
I think he's a guy who has a pretty high ceiling, and that's one of the things I really mm-hmm. like about him. If you're looking for making any small bets on guys and you're predicting strikeouts or anything, you're going to lose your money like I did today if you try to guess that Tabata will strike out. I had picked an opportune moment when he already had two strikes and fouled three balls off and then hit a grounder. He's a guy who does have a high ground ball rate, which mm-hmm. will limit your power because ground balls don't turn in extra base hits a lot. But he puts so many balls in play that some of those grounders are going to go down the line. Some are going to be line drives that go into the gaps. And unless he adds 50 pounds or something, I think he's still going to be legging out more doubles than the average runner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and it looks like he could maintain that speed and break out beat balls down the line and the whole thing.
So we wanted to also address some questions that have been brought up in our forums. Some days when I post top 15 prospect lists, I'm giddily checking the forums the whole day just to see what anyone says. And if you haven't seen any responses from us yet, it's because we're out taking notes at the Fall League games. But we appreciate all the comments so far. I think the biggest thing that was touched on initially was that Michael Saunders and Josh Riddick have both spent time in the big leagues. They both look like guys who could be above average defensive corner outfielders. They both had some success in the upper minors. Why are they at 10 and 11 on this list? And I want to start off by saying, even though both guys are fast and we hear that Riddick has a really good arm, it's very difficult to get defensive information on minor league prospects. And I think that's something we've kind of discovered with Dominic Brown. You really have to go out and see him not once or twice, but three or four times before you get a really good read on it. So I have trouble giving a guy a nod as a potential above average defensive player unless it's been widely reported or I've seen it. I don't really feel comfortable assuming that because a guy runs pretty well or has played a position higher on the defensive spectrum before that he's going to be an above average defender. The other thing we have with Saunders and Riddick that we don't have in comparison to, say, Heisey and Thomas Neal is that Heisey and Neal are both good line drive hitters who managed the strike zone well. Saunders had a really good contact rate in the Pacific Coast League compared to what he'd done in the past. He was around an average hitter in terms of strikeout rate. But prior to that, he did strike out a lot. Both Saunders and Riddick hit a lot of fly balls. In Saunders' case, he has a two-year history of hitting a ton of infield fly balls. Riddick's case, he hits a lot of outfield fly balls. And those guys generally don't hit for as much average because fly balls don't turn into hits as often as ground balls and especially line drives. So it's something where, yes, these guys both have high upsides. Yes, both of them have potential to be above average defensive corner outfielders. But to me, they have a few more questions in terms of their ability to hit than the guys above them. And we've seen from both of them have kind of teased us with these really exciting stints at one level or another. In Riddick's case, he put up awesome power numbers in AA, and he has been a good power hitter throughout his stints in the minors. But his strikeout rate also has gone up a lot since he was in low A. And with both of them, too, we saw once they reached the big leagues, again in small sample sizes, they were striking out at very, very high rates. And I think you see guys in the minors who can be good contact hitters, but once they get to the big leagues and they're facing big league breaking balls and guys with good changeups, then it's kind of one of those things where you hope you can look at the numbers and notice a trend that they're maintaining. But it helps when you actually see them swing. And even though we haven't seen Saunders in person, he is someone who was in the World Baseball Classic. We have video on that. We were able to see what he did in the big leagues a little bit. We went out of our way to try to watch video on everyone on this list. If we hadn't taken it, we'd go on YouTube or Prospect Tube. And in both of these cases, I just see a little bit of reason to be concerned with their hit tools in comparison to someone like Heisey or Weglars, Tabata, these guys we've already seen. And I know some people are hesitant with Jeff Decker. He might not have the good face, but he definitely has the good bat.
No doubt about it.
Some other questions we had. Daryl Jones is someone we've gotten to see here in the Fall League. He was interesting this year where I think he had a variety of leg injuries. I think there was hamstring and knee. But AA Springfield is a place where a lot of guys have success hitting for power. He didn't. He's pretty much an average contact hitter. So at this point, it's tough. Even though he is a solid guy, we're going to be putting together a digital prospect guide. We're working on that with First Inning, and it's going to have prospect profiles for 300 of the top prospects in the minors. I think I'd have a hard time leaving Daryl Jones off the top 300 prospects list at this point.
Absolutely.
He's a pretty talented guy overall.
There's no doubt he was close to making our list, and we considered him a lot. But the extreme drop in power really kind of warned us. And that may have something to do with the leg injuries he suffered. But then again, his strikeout rate went up a little bit. His walk rate went down. And he didn't make any progress from the previous year whatsoever. If anything, he took a step back. And given his track record before last year, you know, it's important for us to be cautious since the season he had last year.
Absolutely. And I mean, over, you know, here in Arizona, he's been a guy who's just been sort of an enigma. That, you know, there you see him doing things that look athletic. He hasn't done anything yet that's made us drop our jaws and go like, wow, this is a guy who, you know, we really need to pay attention to. So
he has a standout goatee.
He does have a standout goatee, actually. That is
he maintains that very well.
He does.
I wish.
Speaking of baseball faces, absolutely.
So I snag a few other questions and comments. We touched on Tabata, and really, again, I think it needs to be looked at strongly that he was a 20-year-old in AAA, and just because the Yankees snubbed him doesn't mean he couldn't be a decent prospect with Pirates. What else do we got? Someone asked where Chris Parmalee and Ryan Strebe would be if they were on the corner for outfield lists, because some people think they could end up playing there with their big league Cubs. Looking at it quickly, I think I'd put Strebe in the 11 to 13 range on this list. I'd have Parmalee a little bit lower. He'd be 15 to 20. We didn't actually rank 20 deep, but we had about 15 other guys who we considered. That's that one. And then we can finish up just talking a little bit more about, I guess, Andrew Lambeau. Lambeau is another guy we've seen out here. We've also gotten to see a bit of, wasn't there one other corner outfielder?
Not really that we can
see. I mean, we saw Tizzoni in the
that's true.
In the Rising Stars game. You know, he was just he looked like just a guy.
Well, and maybe it'll be good to have a couple notes about Nick Weglars. He was someone who we were excited to see out here in the Fall League, but we've discovered that he was playing with a bone bruise, which actually turned out to be a stress fracture in his leg. He's since been removed from the AFL rosters and had a rod put in his leg to help with that. So if you look at Weglar's numbers and see a extremely low batting average on balls in play this year, I'll pull up the exact number, but it was something around.
I'm sure a broken leg would have some kind of impact on that.
So he had a 249 batting average on balls in play last year. The previous 2 years, 323, 341. So he's probably... He had 9 stolen bases in Kinston in 2008. He's probably not going to be a guy who posts above 300 batting average on balls in play in the upper minors, but he's probably going to be a lot higher than 249.
Mm-hmm.
So if you bump that up a little bit, assuming that his stress fracture, which he was playing for who knows how long, probably months, doesn't slow him down next year. And that does sound pretty complicated, putting a rod in your leg. So who knows if he's... He could easily come back and be a first baseman if he loses any more speed. But I still strongly believe in his bat. He's a powerful hitter who's extremely patient, and he's improved on his contact quite a bit from when his first season in low A.
Some of these walk rates. I mean, he's talking about a guy with a 17.6% walk rate in double A at 21. I mean, that's just, you don't see that kind of patience from a guy who's got some power.
Often. And Gaff Decker is really the only other guy on this list.
Gaff
Decker. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see Hayward or Stanton here. Both of them were removed from the league due to injury. Hayward, while everything looks great on paper, he has had his share of injuries for a young guy. That's really my only concern with him right now.
He's not Greg Oden, I promise.
Also, if you look at Hayward when he was in high A, he was pretty good, but he wasn't outstanding. It wasn't until he got to double A where he really blew me away with his performance. But it's very encouraging when you see a 20-year-old in the upper minors who can be better there than he was in the lower minors.
I think the key with that is he really improved in every aspect of the game. His walk rate shot up when he was promoted to double A. His strikeout rate, I think, dropped a few points. And his power shot up. And he kept it going in a cup of coffee with AAA Gwinnett. So he faced the adversity, and yes, the injuries, the nagging injuries do seem to be piling up with him. But nothing major has been holding him back. So hopefully he can kind of stay on the field a little bit more and show us what, you know, why he's the number one prospect in baseball in our eyes.
Mike Stanton, another one. I think he was removed. Was it a back injury?
Yeah, I believe it was actually the same day as Hayward.
Maybe we should injury investigate that one, too.
All right.
But Stanton's someone who seems to have once-in-a-generation kind of power. He does it while walking a lot. His problem has been contact rate, but he showed that starting this year in the Florida State League, he was actually a pretty solid contact hitter. It wasn't until he was promoted to AA where he had trouble, but a guy with his kind of power, I'm sure he's taken a big hard hack, and as a 20-year-old in AA, I'm not going to fault him too much given his power numbers for that contact rate.
Absolutely, and Stanton's a guy who has historically struggled a little bit each time he's been pushed up to a new level. I mean, if you look at his first month in AA, it was just atrocious with the strikeout rate, which, you know, pulled obviously the rest of his numbers down because it was half a season, but he was... You know, he got better as the season went on, still not great, but the power is so insane that you just have to keep an eye on him.
The only three guys that we really haven't touched on any detail so far at this podcast on the list are Caleb Gendel, Kellen Kobocky, Sawyer Carroll. They're all guys who probably aren't going to provide a ton of defensive value. I'm not sure about Carroll, but they're all guys who I think are pretty good hitters, and I expect to have breakout seasons in 2009. If we're wrong about that, you're free to send me.
It's all Adam's fault if you're wrong. But
I'll take the full blame.
I'll take the credit when Caleb Gendel has a monster season.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we are going to get to bed because we're attending even more games tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that and the day after that. We appreciate you listening.
And I also want to take a minute to thank Adam and Brett for letting me join them on this podcast. It's been a lot of fun.
No doubt.
And as Adam mentioned, he said Digital Prospect Guide will be coming out. You should stay tuned, both at First Inning and Project Prospect for details. It's going to be a really exciting project that we hope you will all enjoy very much. We're certainly enjoying putting it together.
This is the truth. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Project Prospect / First Inning podcast.
Guitar.